Welcome to the Live Greatly podcast. I'm your host, Crystal Bauer. It's time to say goodbye to sacrificing your well-being on the way to success. As an entrepreneur in wellness, integrative medicine fellow, university lecturer, longtime physician assistant, experienced in integrative psychiatry and functional medicine, and a keynote speaker, I have a lot of experience and expertise to share. So get ready to optimize your well-being and move in the direction of your dreams. Help spread this valuable and powerful message by sharing the podcast with your friends, family, and community. Together, we can make a profound impact on the world. Now for a quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are purely the opinions of the author. They are not intended to provide medical advice or treatment recommendations, and the contents of this podcast are intended for informational and educational purposes only. Please always seek the guidance of your physician or other qualified healthcare professional. If you have any questions regarding your specific health, changes to diet and exercise, and any medical conditions. We are so lucky to have an incredible guest with us today, Nick Taranto. Nick is the founder of Hop Water, and he developed the concept after putting on 20 pounds while drinking way too much beer. He looked at the market for good alternatives, and when he couldn't find a healthy alternative to beer, he decided to create it himself. He's also the author of The Evolved Eater. He's a U.S. Marine Corps infantry officer with a BA from Dartmouth and an MBA from Harvard. In 2012, Nick started Plated.com from his kitchen counter in New York City, and over the course of 5 years, raised almost $100 million in venture capital, shipped tens of millions of meals across the U.S., grew from 2 to 1,500 employees, and eventually sold the business for $200 million plus in 2017. Nick is an angel investor and advisor to dozens of early stage technology businesses, is also a limited partner in many top venture capital firms. He's based in Santa Monica, California, and is the proud but sleep deprived dad of 2 young daughters. And he always enjoys getting outside whenever he's not building businesses or chasing around his kids. So welcome, Nick. I'm so excited. Thanks for being here today.
Crystal, awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So how have you been doing with everything going on with the pandemic? How are the kids? How's the family? How are you guys holding up?
Yeah, well, you know, I think relative to 99% of the world, we are very privileged. We're very lucky. You know, no one in our family has gotten sick or worse. Both our kids are healthy. They are relatively sane. I don't know about my wife and me, but we're holding it down and just hoping that this vaccine is as good as we think it is. And 3 months from now, we're having a different conversation and kids are back in school and people's lives have returned to normal. But it does feel like the next couple months here are going to be just holding it down and hopefully not too many people, you know, pass in the meantime. But wow, what a crazy year this has been. Oh my goodness. We're sitting here in early December 2020. Wow.
Yeah, for sure. You know, as you were talking, I heard distantly the sound of e-learning from upstairs. So it's you know, when trying to record from home and everything, it's a journey for sure. And I definitely have high hopes for the vaccines as well. And happy that you guys have been doing okay through it all. I really want to hear a little bit about how you got to where you are today, because you are extremely successful. And I'm wondering, like, did you always have this vision for your life? You know, did you know that you wanted to start a company from a young age? If you could just give a little bit of background, I would love to hear a little bit more.
Yeah. You know, I'll give you the quick backstory. So, or my quick background, my life thus far. So I was born in New York in the early 1980s. And my dad is a Turkish immigrant. My mom comes from South Dakota farming stock. I grew up in a big family, 6 brothers and sisters. And, you know, I had a really wonderful childhood. I mean, I was very, very lucky and you know, blessed to grow up the way I did. But I had this sort of hankering that emerged when I was in my early teens. And my life really got shaken up when I was 14, when we had good family friends that passed. And my parents adopted 3 kids. So overnight, my family grew dramatically. And more than, you know, my family growing, which was, you know, in retrospect, a wonderful thing. I mean, I've got all these brothers and sisters and nieces and nephews, and we call my family the shrub now because it's not a tree. It just kind of expands across the landscape, which is amazing. But it made me think about death at a very young age. You know, at 14, I was confronted with close family friends passing and this realization that wow, you can be in your early 40s and just, you know, literally die almost instantaneously. Really hit home, you know, very young. So from age 14, I in retrospect now, I realize I fell into a depression that sort of drove me to into this existential place of what's life all about if it can just disappear in a, you know, an instant. So I got really into, you know, kind of like extreme sports and adventures and just really pushing myself, my mind, my body, to sort of overcome again what in retrospect was depression. And that was like a good 7-year chunk of my life where I spent a lot of time climbing, exploring big mountains, you know, traveling as much as I possibly could, doing a lot of risky stuff that in retrospect was really, really dumb. And I'm lucky I didn't lose any fingers or limbs or worse.
Were you in your teens at that point, or were you in your 20s?
In my late teens into my 20s. Okay. And I was able to get into a great school. I went to Dartmouth, which was an amazing fit for me. So again, I was a big outdoorsman, and I, you know, quite honestly spent a lot more time outdoors than I did in the classroom throughout the early part of college. You know, work through it, you know, work through all that, those demons that were chasing me inside. It was not the most fun or pleasant, you know, stretch of 4 or 5 years, but came out the other side in a place where I felt much more, you know, mission driven and excited about challenging myself in intellectual ways and in, you know, quite honestly, giving back to the world or having a positive impact on the world. Having been through that sort of, you know, darkness, I would say. So I went to Dartmouth and I fell in love with microfinance and with Southeast Asia. I went to Southeast Asia initially after the tsunami in 2004. And I took time off from college and I spent 3 months backpacking around Southeast Asia. So through Burma, you know, now Myanmar, parts of Thailand, Malaysia, and then ultimately into Indonesia. And I was in parts of Indonesia where, you know, hundreds of thousands of people died in this tsunami. So I was, you know, 19 years old, just getting exposed to really wild stuff. So it was a very seminal experience for me. And I, after college, moved to Indonesia. I got a grant from the government to start a microfinance nonprofit. So I moved to a rural part of Java in Indonesia, and I started a microfinance group where I teamed up with some local guys there, and we were giving small loans. You know, our average loan size was about $68, and we were making those loans to day laborers, farmers, you know, people who didn't have access to credit. I'll never forget this woman who, there had been an earthquake in this city where we were working called Solo in central Java, and her house had collapsed and had broken her leg. So when we saw her, when we met her the first time, her leg was literally snapped. You could see the bone underneath her skin. It didn't break the skin, but she still had this broken leg. She literally did not have the money to go to a hospital. So we gave her, I think it was just a little bit over $100, you know, relative to American standards, like nothing. And that enabled her to go and get surgery to fix her leg. So that's the kind of work we were doing there. But I was spending most of my time just raising small, you know, $1 to $2,000 checks from people back stateside to keep this business alive. It wasn't a business, it was a nonprofit. And I, you know, just realized you were never going to have the sort of impact that I wanted to have, raising those small checks. So I came back to the U.S. I did grad school at Harvard. I did the Kennedy School Business School joint degree, and which is an amazing three-year program. I met my wife there. I met my future plated co-founder there. Made friends, you know, dozens of friends for life there. And then I did the, you know, the logical thing you do with six figures in grad school debt and two shiny new degrees. And I went off and joined the Marine Corps. So I became an infantry officer. This was at the peak of the surge in both Afghanistan and to a lesser extent Iraq. And there was a program available at the time where basically spent a year getting trained up with other active duty officers and then transitioned over to the reserve side. So I spent a year between Quantico in Virginia and 29 Palms in the Mojave Desert, and then moved back to New York and almost immediately got into the startup ecosystem. And then, we can explore this a lot more if you like. Went on to start business that would become Plated. So teamed up with the business school buddy, and we spent 6 months just failing a lot, to be honest, working from my kitchen counter, burning through our personal savings, and ultimately, created this business and found a huge amount of success with it. I think a lot of it was luck and seeing a trend emerging and, seeing this wave on the horizon coming and just paddling as hard as we physically could and catching the wave and just riding it and getting out the other side. So we, over the course of that 5-year journey, we went from the two of us in my kitchen counter to over 1,000 employees. We raised almost $100 million in venture capital. We got the business up to north of $150 million in revenue. And we sold the business to Albertsons, a big grocery retailer, in 2017. And that was, 20x return for our early investors in little under 5 years. So, amazing financial outcome for many early employees, investors, life-changing opportunity for Josh and me, my co-founder. That allowed us to move out to sunny Southern California, where I'm talking to you from today. And, quite honestly, a year ago, I found myself just drinking way too much beer. I was drinking, 3 to 4 IPAs a day, which is not good for anyone's, mental or physical well-being. And I just got into a rut and put on, over 20 pounds. I've always been an athlete and I was just, kind of fat and nasty. And my kids were waking me up in the morning, shaking me out of bed, and it was just not good. So I looked out at the market for better options because I love that taste of beer and I love that celebration of cracking a cold one at the end of the day. And I couldn't find what I wanted. I wanted something super low calorie with no gluten, with no alcohol, where I could get that sense of enjoying a beer or at least paying homage to a beer, but with none of the downside.
Sure.
And ideally with some benefit also, some functional benefit. Didn't see that out there. And the entrepreneur in me was just screaming, hey, like if it's not there and you want it, there are probably a bunch of other people that do too. Ran a survey to 1,000 craft beer drinkers, and from that gained the conviction that there was a big white space market opportunity. And teamed up with a buddy of mine here who ran all of the e-commerce for Justin Wines and Fiji Water, a big company here called The Wonderful Company. And we teamed up almost a year ago now to launch Hop Water, which is a hops infused sparkling beverage with adaptogens. So you get, the healthy alternative to beer. That's what we were trying to build in the market here. No booze, just benefits. Take great hops, brew that into water, and then infuse some nootropics and adaptogens. And we launched back in September through pure direct-to-consumer e-commerce. And we're a couple months in now. And it's just going super well, going gangbusters. We're now going into retail here in Southern California and hoping to push nationwide over the next year. Obviously COVID has shaken up all business plans and just plans in general. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what we can do here over the next 12 months, but really excited about Hop Water. And, that I think gets you up to speed on my life.
Wow, Nick, that is absolutely incredible. I'm trying to like absorb all of it and decide where I want to go.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Hop Water a little bit. What gets me really excited about it is the adaptogenic piece, because that's something that I take adaptogenics. I've learned about adaptogenics as an integrative medicine fellow, and I recommended them a lot while I was practicing in functional medicine and integrative psychiatry. And for me, with the stress that I've gone through in my life, they just have been like life changing for me. I feel like where I was just, you know, going through so much stress with my mom, you know, was sick, and then going back to work, going from being a stay at home mom to working again, and all these different shifts in my life. That just, I added at that point holy basil, and now I took ashwagandha, but I felt like it was just enough to keep me feeling, I don't know, level. And some of it, I wonder, you know, some of it potentially could be placebo, but now that I have access to all of these wonderful, you know, papers and research on it through my fellowship, like there's some good research supporting these things as well. So with the adaptogenics in your water, are there different kinds that certain waters have certain adaptogenics, or is it like a blend that you use for all of them? I'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah. We're really excited about adaptogens and nootropics as well. We think it's this space that's just going to boom over the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And it already is, but will become truly mass market over the next 5 years. You know, we use a combination of maca, ashwagandha, and L-theanine in our functional stack. And we were very deliberate about choosing those ingredients for the effects that they would have. In the future, we think there's a way to expand our portfolio. And you know, for example, if you know, we're hearing from a lot of customers that they like having a hop water in place of a light beer with lunch or at brunch. So you can imagine infusing a little bit of caffeine into the functional stack so that it's more of a midday product, or we could have our, you know, hop water lunch products, or in the evening, you know, that's the most frequent use case, you know, crack open a cold one or a few hop waters after dinner or with dinner. So maybe put a bit of magnesium and melatonin in there to help like really calm down before bed. You know, right now we're playing just straight down the fairway with that maca, ashwagandha, and L-theanine. And, you know, what we saw from, when we actually just ran this 2,000 person survey, we commissioned this original research asking how people's behavior changed during COVID. And, you know, this actually shocked me. It's a crazy statistic that came out of our research. A majority of Americans over age 21 reported to us that they stopped work early to have an alcoholic drink during COVID. So, you know, clearly this is an incredibly stressful time for most people, even if you're doing well, kids home, people are sick, just a lot of unknowns, a lot of anxiety about the future. So that stress is real and is unprecedented across the United States and the world right now. Mm-hmm. So this idea of finding a beverage that can help you de-stress, that can help you, you know, fill that need for that alcohol plays in many people's lives, but without the downsides, is huge. So we, you know, we started building this business before COVID, but in many ways, you know, to the extent that it's possible to have a perfect COVID business, this is really a product and a business that is designed, or not intentionally, but that is built for the kind of lives we're all living right now.
Yeah, for sure. You know, a couple of questions that I'm thinking of. I know it's obviously different than taking like a pill or a supplement, but I know that for supplements, for example, when I would be talking to patients about it, I would be looking at what medications they were on, you know, some things you can't take when you're pregnant or trying to get pregnant or can interact or you have a thyroid condition, you know, there's all that stuff. So wondering if there's like any disclaimers you have for your products, and then also dosing, like, you know, with a pill, like it would be like, okay, you take this amount of time, but with drinks, you know, obviously it's different. So wondering what your stance is on that.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, if you have any questions or concerns, consult your doctor, right? I mean, that's on the can, it's on our website. Okay. There's no reason to mess around, you know, especially if you're on an SSRI of some sort, like don't take any risks, talk to your doctor. In terms of dosing, you know, we went with a 50 milligram L-theanine, ashwagandha and maca mix. So, you know, ideally you have a couple cans in an evening to feel the full effects of the stack. but it shouldn't be so much that it's, you know, giving anyone adverse effects.
Sure. Okay, cool. And L-theanine actually is something that I love as well. And, you know, I talk about that in green tea, and I'm a green tea and how it, in some studies, you know, there's this like calm attentiveness that you can have with it. And you mentioned maybe combining it with some sort of caffeine, and that actually, I think, it's a really good idea for people, because I think that that can help sometimes with that, the jitteriness that you get from caffeine.
Right. Yeah, I mean, right now our stack has no, you know, we're not using any caffeine, again, because most people are using the you know, are drinking hot water in the evening, either with dinner or after dinner. But I think, yeah, I mean, we're excited to keep exploring. I mean, it's really a brave new world in the realm of nootropics and adaptogens. So very excited to keep doing innovation and R&D in that area. And I think that's, you know, that's one of the fun parts of being an entrepreneur, is you see something out there, you talk to customers, you see what they want, you build new products, you see if they work, if not, onto the next. And if they do, you know, double down and pour fuel on the fire. And, you know, clearly people are looking for the healthy alternative to beer, looking for healthy alternatives to alcohol more broadly. And, you know, we've clearly created something that people want.
Yeah, I'm excited. And I'm excited to try it too. So at the end, you'll have to tell everybody where we can find it, because I definitely want to check it out. So you talked a little bit about failing, you know, and failure. And that, I think, is really part of the process of starting a company, of establishing yourself, of really achieving success, you know, because that's how you learn. You're going to get no's. And I think the whole concept of failure too, I go back and forth. Like, I don't really believe that failure is failure. You know, I think it's a learning lesson, it's growth, that, you know, there's positives that can be found in all of this. But I'm wondering how you've dealt with that and how you've been able to build resilience to keep going. And I think for some people, you know, they get to a point, if they're hearing no, and then they give up. Like, it just kind of takes away their zest and their passion. So I'm wondering if you've learned any things that have really helped you on your journey.
Yeah. I mean, this idea of, you know, failure, I think, is super important, because if you're doing something hard or interesting, chances are, like, you're going to fail at some point, right? I mean, if you're not failing, you're probably not trying hard enough, right? So, you know, I've come to think about, you know, my life as like a slugging rate, right? Like, you know, like, it's similar in baseball, you know, no one bats 1,000, no one even bats 500. You know, if you're batting anywhere north of 250, you're in you're in the major leagues, right? And I don't know if the ratio is quite the same, but like in early stage investing and certainly building businesses, you know, it's really hard. You know, like, even if you have a good idea and a great team and enough money, chances are it's still not gonna, you know, fully work out. So that's something I've just become more comfortable with over the years, which is, you got to swing big. You know, like, life is short. You know, we're here for 60, 70, 80, 90 years, you know, work for, God willing, 30, 40, 50 of those. There are not that many opportunities to swing. You know, if you think about five to 10 year career chapters, you might have, you know, it's 4, 5, 6 big opportunities to swing. So to my mind, it's been that, you know, that fear of waking up when I'm 70 and thinking, oh, I coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Yeah.
That's been more of a motivator. And again, a lot of that comes back to seeing death at an early age and thinking, oh man, like, I could wake up when I'm 40 or 50 and, you know, not have done anything, right? So to me, you know, it's reframing failure, not as like a true negative, but to your point, rather is like, how can you learn as much as possible every time you take a swing, so that hopefully the next time or the one after that, it connects.
Yeah.
Now I think if you're just, you know, out there smashing your head against the wall, doing the same thing repeatedly, that's literally the definition of insanity, right? But as long as you're learning, and the next time you've internalized those lessons and you're approaching it from a place of maybe more stability and more health and more focus, that's all good. You know, like it's very, you know, when we were starting Plated, we went through four different business models before we came to Plated, and it was very disheartening, to fail, but we failed fast on our way to finding something that worked.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice. And kind of on that same topic, I want to talk a little bit about the hustle culture. So hustling, and you hear that so much now. You got to hustle, you got to have your side hustle, you got to be just, I feel like working all the time is kind of what's promoted out there. And I don't agree with that. I think that the balance of optimizing your well-being, taking time for self-care makes you more successful. I think it improves your performance. Taking time for exercise, nature, family, that's going to make you more fulfilled. And that also leads, I think, to better relationships and how you show up and how you carry yourself. But I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that and the concept of, hustling and the hustle culture.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more, Crystal. Like I'm nodding vigorously here for people that are listening. Obviously there are times in life where you just have to put your head down and work becomes the primary thing and everything else is out of balance, right? And I've certainly gone through those periods. Like you go through officer candidate school or the basic school with the Marine Corps, you're basically off the grid for like 3 or 6 months, right? Or if you're on a deployment, or when you're starting a business, like getting a business up and off the ground can take, 12, 18, 24 months. And if you're not giving it your all, it's probably not going to work, right? But I think that's a very different conceptualization of hustle, right? Because, if you're in hustle mode, be in hustle mode. But when, that shouldn't be a prolonged thing, right? It's like the idea of, sprinting through a marathon, right? Like that's just not going to work. Your body is just going to give out, right? You might be ahead of the pack for a mile or two or five, but then your body is just going to give out. And the same is true in life. I couldn't agree more. I think a lot of people, especially in American culture, fill up that void that I think a lot of us feel inside, that voice when you wake up in the middle of the night and it's dark and a little voice coming from somewhere in your body saying whatever it's saying, right? A lot of people fill that void or, get that voice to quiet down by just working. And, that's okay. I think like it's, well, maybe, it's not okay, right? Because it's, workaholism is another ism or holism, just like drinking too much alcohol. It fills that void, it quiets that voice. I think if you're being deliberate about it and you're treating it like a 3 or 6 or 12 month chapter that you just need to get through, mm-hmm. It's one thing, but spending decades, working sometimes frenetically just to fill the void is I think it's detrimental to physical and mental health, mm-hmm. and to the relationships in your life. And I don't think it leads to optimal, happiness or living.
Yeah.
So I think just being very deliberate about what you're trying to accomplish with your work and how that fits into a broader, pie or portfolio of what you're doing with your life, right? Because, I've got two kids, you've got two kids, like you want to be there for your kids as much as possible, right? Mm-hmm. Just like experiencing the joy of being around them, and being a good parent and hoping that they grow up to be self-sufficient, non-psychopathic individuals, right? Plus staying fit, fitness is, I enjoy getting out surfing, mountain biking, hiking, but it's also like where I recharge. It's my modern religion. It's like where I can find myself most in the moment, most regularly.
Like your mindfulness practice. Yeah. Like a spiritual practice.
Totally. Totally. And then, you know, there's family and friends who have to fit in there also. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know too many people who have just siloed themselves into work at the detriment of themselves and their families and their friends and their health. And, you know, I just feel bad when I see that happen. So I agree with you that this idea of like hustling at the expense of everything else, there's a time and a place for it, but I would just caution making sure that it's not being done for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. What I found too is I'm so much more creative when I take time for myself. Like if I meditate, my kind of spiritual practice is meditation and then running outdoors and being out in nature. After I have a really good run, I'll kind of walk at the end. And it just is a time where I feel like my thoughts really quiet, my mind's really clear. And I can come back and I just have, that's where I have a lot of great ideas and I feel inspired. I feel passionate. And I want everyone to have that. And it, whatever it is for them, I really hope that everybody can find that piece, that spiritual practice of whatever it may be. So you can hustle, you can do what you need to do for work, but like taking that time every day, even if it's like 20 minutes, I think is so important.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, for those of us who are lucky enough to be working from home during this pandemic, you know, I've talked to a lot of folks who've basically been retrained, right? You know, we used to be trained to think, okay, I wake up at 5:30, I commute, I do my workout at the office, then I just grind all day. And then I come home, I see my kids for half an hour before bed, and then I rinse, wash, repeat 5 days a week, right? And I think this pandemic has retrained us to think, you know, maybe there's a different way to prioritize life and reallocate time and accomplish everything that I wanted to accomplish and maybe even more while being a happier person and more present for my family, right?
Yeah, it's an opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, I hope we don't lose track of that when the world, you know, eventually returns to normal, you know, hopefully next year, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, just prioritizing and carving out that time, you know. For me, that middle of the day, you know, if I wake up early and then get the kids out the door, then I grind for a few hours, then if I can go take an hour or sometimes two and just go do something completely, you know, different, yoga or surf or run, and come back, just the energy levels are totally different.
Right. I totally agree. Yeah, that's great advice. I want to chat for a moment about what you think is needed to be successful as a business owner or starting out a company. And if there are any traits that you've noticed, any personality traits that you've noticed in people who end up actually accomplishing their vision?
Yeah, I think there are two. You know, there's this psychological test. I'm sure you're familiar with this, called the Big Five. And, you know, one of the factors in the Big Five is called agreeableness. Hmm. So it's basically looking at, you know, how pleasant you are, right? And then there's another factor in the, you know, the two of the five factors are agreeableness and industriousness. So agreeableness is like how pleasant you are, and industriousness is like just how effective you are at getting stuff done. And what the literature says, and, you know, this is backed up by my own personal observations, is that entrepreneurs tend to be very low on agreeableness and very high on industriousness. Hmm. So, you know, being low on the agreeableness scale doesn't mean that you're an a-hole, but it just means you don't care as much about what other people think as the average person.
Hmm. Interesting. Right?
Which means, you know, you're willing to kind of like go a year or two without a title on LinkedIn, or, you know, doing something that people think is, you know, crazy, or that like your mom and your neighbor don't understand, but just makes sense to you, right? Like you've got that internal compass and you're just listening to your internal compass instead of the external, you know, world. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge factor. And that's related to agreeableness. And industriousness, the biggest thing there is just like getting shit done, right? Mm-hmm. Being a person who just delivers, right? And is efficient and effective at making things happen. And you know, I think in the corporate world, it's, you know, it's relatively more easy to play politics. So to be an agreeable person and to not get that much done, but to just, you know, move things around and maintain the appearance of work. Whereas if you're an entrepreneur, like you just have to get things done. You know, if you have to set up an email account, there's no assistant to do that. Yeah. Or if you're going to do Facebook marketing, you just got to learn how to do it. And, you know, that's true whether you're super early or running a large organization. There are just always new problems that come up that you have to go solve. And there's probably not going to be anyone there to do it for you. You just have to go figure out how to do it. Yeah. So that industriousness and agreeableness, I think, are two factors. And you can take this Big Five test online, and it's been super helpful for me and my teams, and even with my wife, just understanding, hey, look, here's where I rank really high and here's where I rank really low. And it's interesting to compare yourself to others and see where you're complementary or where there are overlaps.
Interesting. You know, the agreeableness, I get it. But at the same time, I feel like a big part of growth is having connection and building connection, having people connect with you, connecting with others. So I don't know, do you see that at all? Like, how does that fall into this?
Well, I think there's like, you know, again, there's a difference between connection, which is an innate human need, right? We're tribal animals, right? Yeah. We grew up, you know, for the last, a couple million years, our ancestors lived around fires in caves, and you had to get along, right? Like that's wired into our brains that you have to cooperate to survive, right? And now in modern society, it's easier to live on the fringes and still survive, but like that's literally wired into us that you need to cooperate with the tribe in order to survive, right? I think that is different from agreeableness, which is like, look, I have an opinion, I'm gonna let you know it, right?
Oh, yeah, no, that makes total sense. So they're different things. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
And that's then, you know, back to the Big Five, another one of the factors is introversion versus extroversion. Mm-hmm. That's one of the Big Five, right? Are you a person who, and the way that's defined is an introvert recharges their batteries. And that's a technical term. Yeah. Just kidding. You know, an introvert recharges their batteries by being by themselves, whereas an extrovert recharges their batteries by being around other people. So
which one are you?
You know, the other interesting thing is these things change over time, yeah. Right? They're not static, they're dynamic. And when I was younger, I was much more of an extrovert. You know, I really got a lot more recharge from being out and about and talking and mixing it up. And as I've, you know, gotten older, and I'm by no means like ancient at this point, but I'm like 36 and I kind of feel like I got kids now. So I'm like in that
grown up. You
know, I'm definitely no longer a kid, right? although I like to feel that way as much as possible. But I've become much more introverted, right? Like, where I find I get the biggest recharge is maybe just like sitting alone with a podcast or going for a walk and listening to something or reading The Economist. And like after an hour of that, I come back and feel more refreshed. So what do you think about yourself?
I think that I'm an introvert as far as recharging, for sure. Like I recharge with my meditation time, with walks outside. I need space after. I love being around people, but at the same time, if there's like a big family party or a big gathering, I then come home and I feel like I need a little quiet time to myself. So it's kind of the balance of I'm very social and very talkative, but then I need to have alone time as well. So I think but you know, it's interesting. Like I think that it has shifted. You know, I used to not really want as much alone time when I was in my teens and 20s, and now I crave it. It's a little different.
I think it's also partially like you just get more comfortable with yourself, right?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think especially since I started meditating, I've learned that I really then desire that time where I can just calm down my mind. I think it's just also the brainwave patterns. Like if you're able to just have quietness, your brainwave patterns change, and that can bring about a sense of kind of and just relaxation, which I think we all really need.
Yeah. I mean, I strive to do some form of meditation every day. Like at one point I was doing, you know, 30 minutes every day religiously, but you know, there's so much that goes on with each day. It's hard for me to commit that much time, but I find I try to get at least a minute.
And that's okay. You know? Like I tell people, 5 minutes, start with 5 minutes. That's doable. Yeah. You're just focusing on your breath, but like with what you're doing, especially if you're surfing, you really enjoy it. You're in the present moment. I mean, that's like your mindfulness. It's like moving meditation, you know? So I think it doesn't have to always be just sitting still. For some people, they really need that. But I mean, for someone like you, if you have things you're doing where you feel like you're totally in the moment, you're present, you know, that might be your meditation.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Well, we are coming to a close. How can people find your water, which I want to try? So how can I find it and find out more about what you're doing? You also have this book and, you know, so how can people get a hold of you if they want to learn more or get your water?
Yeah. So you can find the healthy alternative to beer, Hop Water. We're online at Hop, H-O-P, and then water is W-T-R. So HOPWTR.com. And, you know, free shipping on your first 12 pack. So come give us a try, HOPWTR.com. Also on Amazon now. So you can find us there. Again, HOPWTR is the brand. We've got Mango, Blood Orange, and Classic. I honestly love all three, and I use them differently. I'll have a Blood Orange or a Mango at lunch with a salad or like a grain bowl, and then in the evening when it's like time for dinner, instead of having that beer, I'll crack open a Classic, and then maybe in the evening, you know, after the kids are in bed, I'll have another one or two, like, you know, Blood Oranges or Classics. So yeah, I mean, if you're looking to cut back the alcohol, you know, Sunday through Thursday, Hop Water is a great way to do that. Or, you know, if you're, you know, Dry January is coming up, if you're trying to not drink for the whole month, you know, order a bunch of Hop Water. What the research shows is that having alternatives on hand is the best way to accomplish your goals of drinking less. So yeah, give us a try. I mean, I'm out there on the interwebs also, on Instagram and LinkedIn and all that. Yeah, would love to hear from folks, especially if they've tried Hop Water and they have any thoughts on how to be better.
Fantastic. Awesome. Well, I will put a link in the show notes as well, so people can click that. This has been amazing. Thank you so much, Nick. I've loved having you on. Thank you so much.
Crystal, great chat with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Live Greatly podcast today. You can learn more about me and Live Greatly at www.livegreatly.co. You can check out my online courses, A Healthy Mind Starts in the Kitchen, to Eat to Optimize Your Mood, and an 8-week online course to guide you towards optimal well-being and success. Check me out on Instagram at livegreatly_co and on Facebook at livegreatly.co. I'm also very active on LinkedIn, so you can follow me there. Please leave a review and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on any future episodes. Share it with your friends. And until next time, this is Crystal Bauer with Live Greatly, encouraging you to awaken your ultimate potential.